Hi, welcome to the China Unscripted podcast. I'm your host, Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Gnaizda.
China, the country with an internet freedom ranking that's just below Iran and Syria, is trying to shape the future of the global internet. One Chinese cybersecurity professor has said China has the capability now to set up international rules for cyberspace and use our strategy and our rules to influence the world. And Chinese Premier Li Keqiang has said China is considering setting up its own rules in cyberspace. Joining us today to talk about the future of the internet is digital policy strategist Dominik Lozansky. Hi, Dominik.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. My name is Dominik, and I live in London. I do consulting primarily in the mobile industry, but also in the internet industry more widely on digital policy and cybersecurity policy. I also do a lot of work in standards, which is how technology is agreed upon in terms of interoperability and how things work and work together, like your phone and your computer. So I do a lot of work in international organizations that deal with that as well.
Great. So here, just help me get a better idea of this. So the internet is run basically by a series of turtles on conveyor belts, right?
Exactly.
Okay. That's why it's so slow all the time.
Exactly.
All right. Well, now that we got the tough questions out of the way. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on China Unscripted. No. All right. So first of all, do you ever look at the internet and think, "Wow, that was a bad idea"?
No, but I think we need to step back because I strongly believe, and I've said this a few times, that there is no one global interconnected internet anymore. It developed obviously out of research in early government in ARPANET in the U.S., but also at the same time, Russia was developing its own version of data or information to be able to be delivered over networks or telecommunication networks. But now we have an internet that is cut off. You know, China has its own version of an internet for its country. Russia does as well. And increasingly we're seeing that with a lot of countries across Africa and the Middle East, where they quote unquote turn off the internet, which means they're just able to disconnect their own network in their country from
the
rest
turtles
of the world.
Off the conveyor belts.
Exactly. There are no turtles anymore.
Okay. Well, so this is an important point because there are essentially two competing, incompatible visions for the future of the internet. One is basically the U.S. model, free and open internet that protects the privacy of users. And the other is, for now, let's just call it sort of the China model, a sort of a sovereignty-based model where each country gets to decide for itself how the internet is run. It's an authoritarian, secure, and controllable model. Which one do you see as winning?
Well, I think we're at an interesting point right now where China is taking its national ideological and technical approach to the internet and trying to put it out there and trying to disseminate it internationally through standards making, through policy organizations, through international organizations, where they're trying to legitimize national standards and national approaches. And we've seen a little bit of that today at the Munich Security Conference. Vice President Mike Pence and a Chinese official actually going back and forth over, you know, Huawei as well as sort of their approaches to the internet.
Well, so I'm curious, you say China's trying to set internet standards. What does that mean?
So an internet standard or a communication or telecommunication standard is an agreed upon technical aspect, I guess I could say, that provides for interoperability. So a great way to describe it is we all know that there's this thing called 5G coming, but in order for 5G to happen, industry and governments and vendors, mobile operators, satellite providers have to come together and discuss how 5G is going to be able to work across networks, across computers, across mobile phones in countries, and they agree upon these interoperability and these technical aspects so that it can be deployed. The same happened for 4G or for 3G mm-hmm. or for HTTP, for example, which is a markup language. So it's basically a way of getting people together to figure out how to get the new technologies to work together. But what's happening is China is putting a lot of people behind and resources from China, from industry, behind taking their approaches to standardization into international organizations. And I can basically say that their approach, and you'll be no surprise to hear this, is a more centralized approach for a centralized collection of data, for management of information, ability for access of personal information, ability to have a single point of access for a variety of things.
Well, and this is shocked.
Yes, I know you're shocked. this is not the same approach, as you know, to a very decentralized internet that we've seen so far. I mean, there are different arguments to that, but basically the West promotes the sort of a decentralized internet.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the Chinese Communist Party has set up a new sort of state model where called China Standards 2035. It's actually sort of a replacement for the Made in China 2025 that kind of got exposed and now they're not really talking about so much. But it's basically what you said, trying to set these standards for the future of tech, and in doing so, create a China-dominated tech future.
Yeah, and the key to that, and they're very clear about how they go about doing it. They've articulated it quite well. It's not a surprise if you're paying attention like you are, but how they're going about doing that is, again, there's a number of national standards, and we've heard a little bit about this in the news, where companies have to adhere to these particular standards in order to participate in China, whether they're already Chinese companies or they're coming into the market.
Like Western companies, you mean?
Yeah, like Western companies. But even China Telecom, China Mobile, Alibaba, they all have to also adhere to these laws that are that basically say, you know, here's what we need from you for security, for personal information, for blockchain, for whatever it might be, different technical aspects. And taking their approaches to things, taking that internationally, is really how they're trying to execute this strategy.
So are they recommending that other countries adopt the same practices?
Absolutely. Yep. That is absolutely true. And again, it's not a surprise to understand that there are certain countries that are aligning with them on these practices. Saudi Arabia, for example, some other countries in the Middle East, Russia, former Soviet countries, a number of countries in Africa who obviously have already gained investments from China from a technological approach.
Sort of authoritarian regimes.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Is there a connection between this and China's Belt and Road Initiative?
There is. And I think there's been a little more discussion about this in the news lately. But the idea that that China goes in and makes investment in countries also means that there are trade-offs in those countries. And making an investment with the Belt and Road Initiative, and I believe they're laying fiber with that as well, they're laying quite a substantial amount of fiber, means the countries through which this happens, there'll probably be discussions or negotiations and agreements on using, for example, base stations, which are mobile stations that we've all seen around the country, where, you know, you've got mobile spectrum being emitted. So maybe using base stations from Huawei in those countries, based on the fiber that they've laid. So.
Well, so what does it mean if China sets the standards?
It means that if China sets the standards, especially through international organizations, they legitimize those standards. And in many countries, especially many countries in the Global 77, which again are, you know, include like Russia and the Middle East and Africa, they can put those standards into their legal and regulatory frameworks into their countries, which means any particular company, whether it be a Western company or a company from Europe or wherever, goes into those countries and they'd have to adhere to legal standard, maybe let's say for data protection, that comes from a China background rather than from a Western background. And so suddenly you have their sphere of influence being wider than just China.
So that's like if Apple goes into China or any one of these other countries that adopts China standards, they will be operating in a way that might be detrimental to the people of that country.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think the question I want to know is, will this affect me in the U.S.? Will I still be able to go on 4chan? Not that I go on 4chan.
Well, this is actually the really interesting question. Will you be able to use WeChat, right? Will the initial, and let's actually go back up a little bit. You know, there's a lot of discussion about Huawei right now and the West and Europe. You know, obviously we've seen all the discussions about banning equipment in the, you know, in new and current telecommunication networks. We have to remember that this started in 2012 under a House Intelligence Committee investigation that was bipartisan in the Obama administration at that time. This has been an ongoing discussion for quite a long time now, I would say almost 8 years, the influence of China technologically in the U.S. And because of those ongoing discussions, even though we can access apps or games or whatever from China, we're still not going to, you know, have the equipment in the U.S. In the U.K., where I live, in London, it's a little bit different because we do have Huawei equipment and Huawei handsets have recently been pulled off the market a little bit, depending on the on the mobile operator, cell phone operator. But we have a little more options. But yes, unless China cuts off, you know, their ability for you to access the servers in China, which could be a possibility, you still will be able to access that information.
So one argument that China, one argument that the Chinese Communist Party often makes is, look at the U.S. internet, like the problems of fake news, how chaotic it's become. And then they say the U.S. model has failed and the internet does need to be controlled. What do you think about that argument?
I think it's a slippery slope from being controlled and to censorship. What I see in the work that I do, so much of the approaches to the technology is about centralization of information so that there's a choke point. I think it's far better, even though it's difficult, to have the discussions about fake news and cybersecurity and all of that that's happened in the public rather than cut the discussions off as it is. One of the things last year, NATO has a conference, it's called CYCON. It's a cyber conflict conference that happens every year in Tallinn in Estonia. And that was a pretty amazing thing to see, to have Facebook and Microsoft and a number of companies there saying, here, look, this is what happened to us. And we know we failed and we know we're under fire. So let's have this discussion. I'd rather have that, honestly, than have a situation where I don't know what's going on and I can't choose and understand what information is being delivered to me. But that's my opinion on the thing. Mm-hmm.
Do you think people are paying enough attention to what's happening here?
I don't, actually. Part of it is because it's very technical. Part of it is because it's these technical discussions have suddenly become geopolitical. And I think the issue of Huawei has raised awareness. But on the day-to-day, you know, spending a couple weeks a year going and negotiating standards, for example, is not sexy or interesting or exciting, but it's important for the future of the internet.
Well, we have a very different understanding of what sexy is.
It's true. So let me give you an example of something else that's going on. There's a UN agency called the International Telecommunications Union, ITU. It's over 150 years old. It's currently run by a Chinese called Hulin Zhao. He's the secretary general, which they're responsible for a variety of things, including international spectrum harmonization, satellite orbitals, so satellites don't, you know, crash into each other, telephone numbering, really not sexy stuff, I'm afraid. But initial discussions are underway to replace the operating model, the way the internet currently works, with a different one, a different approach. So it would be a different type of underlying technology. And that particular group is being chaired by somebody from Huawei.
Oh,
so
dear.
So when you start thinking sexy, the geopolitical aspect of these discussions are more sexy than probably the actual technical aspect, but both are obviously working together.
So it seems to me China is very good at influencing these sort of international bodies, particularly the UN. What is their strategy? How are they able to control these things?
There's a couple of different strategies. On a very basic level, they can send a lot more people and are able to do that and afford that. And that's just a really basic level. But more substantially, they've managed to put key individuals into managerial positions and managerial posts, like at organizations like the WTO, the World Trade Organization, the ITU. And so there's a report I've seen recently, somebody who testified. Let me just have a quick look. There's a report out on, you know, where different Chinese individuals, you know, from either the Communist Party or from the political leadership in China hold various levels of positions. And it's been a strategic thing, as you mentioned, with their goals that they have technologically and also politically. They strategically have set this up in the longer for the longer term.
Do you think that other countries are aware of this? Are they concerned about it? Or is this just kind of like the way it's working?
I think they are aware and concerned. I mentioned the 2012 House Intelligence Committee discussions. I think this initiated a lot of, you know, research into this. I would say, you know, Europe, I would say the US, Canada, you know, a lot of the very same allies are aware of it and attend these meetings in order to be there when China's there. But again, it's different for different countries, right? It has to do with cost, ability to afford things, and the fact that, you know, a lot of these countries are hopefully democratic and, you know, market-based when it comes to technologies, right? They have, Sweden, for example, has Ericsson, and Ericsson's a big player in future 5G technologies. And so they let their industries lead the way in a lot of the development of technologies, where China's very focused on having government and government officials lead the way.
That's an interesting distinction. I think one thing we need to talk about is ICANN. ICANN is a bit like the phone book of the internet. It lets you find YouTube by typing in youtube.com instead of a long string of numbers that make up YouTube's actual IP addresses. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's it. It's a resolver, I guess, for the internet.
Okay. And so ICANN used to be run by the US, which was pretty hands-off. But now ICANN's being run by a mix of corporate interests, government officials, activists, and experts spread across four international bodies. How is China able to influence ICANN? And what would that mean for the future of internet freedom?
Yeah, so ICANN is an interesting. We could spend hours, many podcasts, talking about ICANN.
Oh, let's.
And I'm not. I mean, I follow it, but I don't go to the ICANN meetings. So there are many other people that are better experts in this. But effectively, what happened with ICANN is the root or the main core of the internet that provides what you described, the resolver, right? To point URLs and individuals to the right direction. I'm being very basic here, but basically what used to happen is the US government used to go down to a room in the basement and manually update that server or series of servers. Now, what happens is there's a group which is called multi-stakeholder. It's a multi-stakeholder group. So, yes, corporations, civil society, governments get together and basically work together to make that change as opposed to the U.S. government. And multi-stakeholderism is something we should mention. It's really key to the running of the internet because it means anyone from any constituency, you, me, or somebody from Facebook or somebody from China can participate in how the internet is run. So the core difference about ICANN is that basically the IANA function that you and I just described, that's what it's called. It's a bit technical, but that's what it's called, is now run by a group of individuals rather than the U.S. government. So China participates in a number of internet policy areas, but it has no greater weight than the U.S. or Russia or Germany or whatever. So there's less of an issue with ICANN, and it's my personal opinion that while this whole transition process of ICANN and the IANA function was going on, we generally kept our eye on that, and the focus on China participating in other organizations, looking at how they can, you know, change 5G to be more to the, what they want, was going on without a lot of focus. So I think that's, to me, a bigger issue. There was a lot of focus on ICANN from 2014 to 2016, and I think a lot of people dropped the ball on what else was going on politically.
Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, Huawei, the Chinese telecom company that the U.S. has been calling a national security risk since at least 2012, Huawei owns about 10% of 5G essential patents. So yeah. Is that a cause for concern?
Yes, absolutely. So again, the thing with 5G is the standards for 5G are being made in an organization called 3GPP, which was set up to do 3G. But now it's evolved. And governments and all of industry, from China Mobile to, let's say, AT&T to Ericsson, all participate in that standards body. Again, it's called 3GPP. And that's where the 5G standards are being made. However, China has some differences that they want to initiate in the standards. So they go over to the ITU and start work in the ITU when all of the rest of industry and most of the Western governments, with the exception of like the US and UK, are at 3GPP. So if you see what I mean, they're like, okay, so we're in 3GPP, we're going to play that game, but then we're also going to be in the ITU and we're going to create other standards as well that are going to be a little more easy for us to centralize information and to deal with our networks how we want to in 5G. So there's effectively going to be a primary standard from 3GPP, a series of standards, I should say, for 5G, and then there'll be extra sort of standards from China that'll probably be placed into other countries as well. So that makes things even more complicated, I'm afraid.
Well, so why is 5G so important? I mean, to me, it just sounds like it's 1G better than 4G.
So I think if you talk to most engineers, what they'll say is it's effectively marketing, right? Mm-hmm. But on a serious note, the importance for 5G is to be able to release and handle more data and more communication at the high spectrum level. So basically, so 4G, if we think about when things changed from 3G to 4G, we were able to download stuff more easily, emails or videos or whatever.
More cat photos.
I love cat photos. So absolutely more cat photos. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what the internet's there for.
You know, and that's pretty much what I look at. But yeah, so from 4G to 5G, you'll be able to do that more, right? So it'll get faster. Mm-hmm. And that's great for cat videos. Mm-hmm. But the other thing 5G is going to allow for is very low frequency bandwidth. Why does that matter? Because we have this thing called Internet of Things, IoT. And if you have a lot of devices on a network that are constantly talking, you don't want them clogging up the high bandwidth stuff where the cat videos are. You want them being able to communicate at another level where it's not going to clog the information up, right? Mm-hmm. And so once the low bandwidth stuff gets released, you know, I'm thinking maybe something like your watch. I have a Garmin that I use that I ski with, for example, and be able to have that communicate, you know, back and forth to me. I don't want to use high bandwidth stuff, for example. So what's going to happen in 5G is you're going to have a lot more spectrum released, a lot more availability of spectrum at super high data download and super low, persistent communication. And that's going to make it easier for things to be online, for us to be online, for devices to be online that are not, urgent or don't involve emergency communications anymore. So hopefully it'll make life a bit easier for everybody, for businesses. The biggest impact, I think, is going to also be very unsexy. It's going to probably be in the B2B area of procurement.
You mean business to business?
Yes, sorry, business to business. So a lot of shipping and procurement and things like that that are becoming more and more automated. We'll see a lot more availability of that, but also it'll run better and be more efficient. And that's, again, not sexy, but it's going to make our life a lot easier.
Well, if all those things are being run by a new set of internet standards, does that mean that there'll be central access points for information, say, between shipping companies that can be accessed by the local government?
Well, that's an interesting point. So if you're a shipping company and you're going in from, let's say, I don't know, the Netherlands into China, however you it takes to get around there, I think it's possible that your information may be accessed in China differently than it may be accessed in the Netherlands, for example. But if you're a private company, right, you're going to have a secure, especially in Europe, you're going to have an availability of security. You're going to, adhere to GDPR and all of that. So you're it's going to be quite interesting to see how, for example, GDPR interacts with China's version of personal information protection. So,
I don't think I understood any of that.
Okay, we don't have to, yeah. It's not my area of expertise, by the way, so you don't have to put it on the podcast.
I see this is the real challenge of this, because this is, from what you're saying, 5G will connect us to the internet in ways we can't even really imagine, but this internet will be something potentially controlled in a big part by a massive authoritarian state. So it is really important, and yet so hard for people to kind of understand and find the sexiness of.
Yeah. So I think I often think of it as, in your day-to-day work, when you're going about business, reading the news, checking your email, whatever you're doing, how much is it really going to impact you? Are you going to be doing shopping from a website in Russia? Probably not. You're probably going to be using Amazon or whatever. I think the same is true for individuals in the countries that are going to be in more authoritarian countries. Are they going to be shopping on Amazon? Probably not. For example, I think the bigger issue is around human rights. It's around censorship. It's around control. It's around, what the future looks like, right? What do we want? Do we want people to be able to be healthy and act on their own free will, or to be, go to the election box and be cut off again from any communication from their family or anybody else for a week, So I think that's the bigger issue. And it's ideological, but it's also about what we want for people, for humanity in the future.
So at a high level, this is essentially just one more front in the battle between sort of the Western-led democratic model, where individual freedoms are respected, and an authoritarian model China is really exporting around the world.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if you view at it from a human rights point of view as well, that's probably the best way to approach it. Okay. Yep.
And so sooner or later, one of those models is going to be bigger and stronger.
I think so. And it depends on what organizations or institutions also facilitate that, in addition to governments. Yep.
So is there anything we can do about what's happening, or are we just kind of doomed to watch it all play out?
So I'm often described as being someone who's very negative. I think that I am not negative about this, because I ultimately believe that, you know, raising the issues, calling out censorship where it is actually happening in the name of security, national security or control or whatever, which, you know, there's a lot of co-option of language in all of these international discussions, is the best thing to do. And I think from within these countries as well, you'll see individuals who are working on, you know, raising the issue like we've seen in Russia already.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Dominique. I think you did a great job explaining some pretty complicated topics in a way that at least I understood. I don't know if Shelley understood it all.
No, I think your understanding was definitely superior to mine, Chris.
Yes, turtles all the way down. So if anyone listening wanted to learn more about these issues or about your work, where can they go? What can they do?
Sure. My website, DominiqueLazansky.com, has a number of links on it, but also more widely, I am writing and participating in a number of institutions, and you can just find me on a simple Google search.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have
you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully the next time we talk, it won't be in a Chinese Communist Party run internet.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks again.
I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Gnezda.
And leave us lots of good reviews and stars. Talk to you next time.